Thank you for that very nice welcome. As you know, I'm Welsh, very proud of it. And the wonderful poet Dylan Thomas wrote a play called Under Milkwood. You probably know it. And it's been like a talisman all through my life because I've been in show business, as you call it, for 40 years now. I know I'm that old. And all through that 40 years, I've always done somewhere, every few years, I've done a production of Under Milkwood. And the whole thing of Under Milkwood is about a day in the life of a little Welsh village called Llareggub. And it's quite a naughty word backwards, that, actually, but you don't need to know that. Anyway, the very first time I was in it, it was an audition piece, and I played Lily Smalls. And she's meant to be about 15 years old. And I was terribly lucky because of that audition piece, I got into the BBC radio rep, which was a wonderful job. And the second time, I was in a television production of it. And it was a very, very exciting production. And I played May Rose Cottage, who's 17 years old and never been kissed, ho, ho. And as she says, when I grow up, I'm going to sin till I blow up. I haven't sinned till I blow up. I know what she means. Then the third time I was in it was a quadraphonic radio production, and I played Polly Garter. Now, Polly Garter loves men, and men love her, and she's got lots and lots of babies, and they're all different fathers. And she spends her time in the garden feeding her baby under the washing line. And as she says, nothing grows in our garden, only washing and babies. Anyway, the next time, I mean, you've got to fast forward a few years now, about 10 years really, and I was in a production in aid of Dylan Thomas's plaque in Westminster Abbey with Richard Burton, the famous Richard Burton. Well, of course, it was a wonderful production, and his marvellous voice, and he's so sexy. And I was playing Polly Garter again, and I was revving myself up to come on, and he was doing the narrator. He was narrating the whole piece. And he said, before I go any further, I want you to meet my wife. And waiting in the wings was Elizabeth Taylor. Well, of course, she looked ravishing. She was stunning, and she came on the stage, and the whole audience erupted. I mean, it was just Elizabeth Taylor. And there was I, Polly Garter, sort of standing behind, sort of thinking, oh, I don't know whether to sing now or not. Anyway, it wasn't a very good moment, but I did go ahead and do it in the end. But I think Elizabeth Taylor was the star of the show. Then, the next time I did it, fast forward another 10 years or 6 years, and George Martin, do you remember, he was the wonderful person who recorded the Beatles songs. Yes. Well, he decided that he was going to make a recording of Under Milkwood. So he got all the very best Welsh actors. I mean, everyone was in it. There was Tom Jones, there was Harry Secombe, and Tony Hopkins was the narrator. There were so many Welsh actors. You can imagine the chats that went on in the interval, can't you? It was the most marvellous production. And then, of course, we did it for one night on the stage as well. Now, I'm getting a bit older by now. I'm playing the middle-aged women in it now, right? So we're getting there, because I've played all women bar one in Under Milkwood. So the last time I did it was at the National Theatre about 5 years ago. And the director had a brilliant idea. It was in the Olivier Theatre. I don't know if any of you have been there, but it's got a very, very tall space, the gantry where the lights are right up at the top. And the director thought it'd be a brilliant idea that because the first scene is about Llareggub, the town, is sleeping. It's just before dawn, and they're all asleep. And Captain Cat is dreaming of his lost loves. So he thought it'd be a brilliant idea if we were hanging in our beds from the gantry. So we had to go into our beds 20 minutes before the audience came in and be strapped in, hanging 6 feet above the stage. Now, it was all right most of the time, but just occasionally you'd have some of the lost loves would sort of bump into your bed. And I was Mrs. Ogmore Pritchard, who's really getting quite old by now, and I had either side of me my husband, Mr. Ogmore, Mr. Pritchard, but Mr. Pritchard, the actor, was terrified of heights, so he wouldn't get into bed with me. He had to get in. When we landed on the stage, he sort of crept in. But it was the most terrifying thing as we swayed gently to make our entrance. But it was a magical production, and it just proves that a radio play can be shown on the stage. Well, of course, there's one more part. And she's Marianne Sailors. And as she says, she's 86, 1 month and a day. So I've got quite a long way to go yet. But I'm open to offers, if anybody wants to put it on. Of course, I'm Welsh. I was born in Rhyl, North Wales, by the sea. And I absolutely love the seaside. If I'm ever a bit depressed, my husband always takes me to the seaside because something about it in the air, the iodine, something just lifts you, doesn't it? Winter or summer. So I had a very chapel background. My father was the chapel organist. He was an ironmonger by trade, but brilliant musician. And he taught me that there's such a lot to be joyous about. He was always happy, my dad. He'd walk in a room and you think, good, he's here. You know that sort of man? And I had a wonderful childhood. I was near the seaside. I had a fun fair around the corner. And the chapel was never repressive. It was our social event. We'd meet there for teas and go on Sunday school trips and everything. It was a brilliant, firm background for me to go into this ridiculous profession I'm in. I loved it. I'm very, very lucky. And, of course, we had the Eisteddfods. For those of you who don't know, competitions where you speak poetry or you sing. And so all my life, I've been used to sort of getting up and performing, really. So no great surprise when I said I want to be an actress. So my dad said, well, good idea, but why don't you do a teacher's training course? So if anything goes wrong, you can be a teacher. I mean, I don't mean to say that teachers are second-class citizens, but, you know, it was a very good balance. So I went to this college, and as I told you, I went in for this competition, and I was terribly lucky. I got the prize, the Carlton Hobbs Award, for a six-month contract with the BBC. And I thought, I think what I'll do is I'll just do this contract, and then I'll go back to being a teacher. And then I went to the Royal Court Theatre, and I did a few months there, and it was very avant-garde in those days, very kitchen sink, very sort of real and all that, you know, very gutsy. And I thought, well, I'll just do this, and then I'll go back being a teacher. Then I got into the Royal Shakespeare Company, and I was very small fry. I played First Fairy in Midsummer Night's Dream with Judi Dench playing Titania, and she was magical. And the designer of the show had got us these wonderful wigs. They were made of yak. They were made in Paris, actually, and they brilliant. They sort of went out like this, and they all had glitter in them, and Judy and I flitted across the stage, you know, with these yak wigs. It was a very magical production. Now, as the first fairy, I had to sing a lullaby and comb this yak wig, which was all very well, but I dropped the brush in it. And one night, poor little Judy had to go flitting about the stage, looking very dainty and fairy-like, with a brush bouncing up and down. She always mentions that story whenever I see her. It was brilliant, though. I had a wonderful year at Stratford. So I thought, perhaps I'll go back to teaching. Perhaps I won't. So next thing that happened was I went back to the Royal Court. And I did some more plays there. And by now, I'm thinking, I think I'm an actress. Now, as you can see, nothing's ever planned in my life. I've always lurched from one job to another and one emotional hiatus to another. Nothing's ever been meticulously planned. But my God, have I been lucky. I've been so lucky. I've had everything, really, that anybody could ever want. So being an actress was just such fun for me. It was the sort of by mistake an actress. That's why I'm not totally dedicated, I don't think. I just enjoy it. So I didn't go back to teaching. And then I went for an audition and got the part of Jimmy Bolam's girlfriend in The Likely Lads. Do you remember that wonderful series? And the producer of that was directing a new comedy called Liverbirds. So he thought I might be quite good and would fit in all right in there. So the next 11 years were just fantastic. Yes, I was in it for 11 years, 5.5 years with Polly James, and then another 6 years, no, sorry, 5.5, doesn't add up, 11 years, does it? 5.5. With Elizabeth Estenson, who, of course, is marvellous in Emmerdale at the moment, isn't she? It was such a wonderful time, and I've remained very friendly with all of them, and Polly's godmother, my daughter. And Molly Sugden, who played my mum, I went to her 80th birthday last year. She's still such good fun. I remember once we were doing a personal appearance on Liverpool football ground. And in those days, of course, the uniform of the Liverbirds was hot pants or mini and big long white stretchy boots. Do you remember, men? Do you? So there I was on Liverpool football ground, and then I got a bit mobbed, and all the men were trying to sort of get hold of my chest and things. So Molly, very protective, she got hold of her big handbag and she went whack on his head like that. She's a wonderful lady. There were lots of funny incidents when we were doing Live at Birds. I remember one time, Polly's very tiny. She's under 5 foot and so slim. And we were meant to be rather poor. And, you know, we wanted to raise money. So we were going to sell a commode that we had in the flat. Now, by mistake, I left the lid of the commode up without potty in it. And Polly got stuck, her little bum got stuck in it when she sat on it. And then there was this awful moment when we realised that we couldn't go on and we were laughing. You've gathered by now I'm a bit of a giggler. We couldn't stop laughing. And Sid Lotterby, the producer, voice came from behind and said, Polly and Neris, this was in front of the whole audience, if you can't control yourselves, I think you better leave and come back in again. We were like naughty little schoolgirls and we just had to walk out and come back in again and sit down, and then we got on with it. But that's been my one quite big failing, that I do giggle rather a lot. Now, I always did lots and lots of excellent plays while I was doing the Live of Birds. And what we'd do something like 6 episodes, and then we'd do summer season or a play, or quite often do drama series. And then what would happen, you'd come back and do the rest of it, and the other 6 episodes, and then you go do a pantomime. Well, I went to do a guest star part on a thing called The Expert, and I was meant to be lying dead in a ditch. And the man who was meant to draw up beside me in a car missed his place in the road, and he skidded and would have absolutely crashed into me and killed me. But the brilliant cameraman got hold of me and the camera and rolled us into a ditch. And I looked up into the most beautiful green eyes, women, ladies. I mean, really gorgeous. He's a bit scrumptious, and it's Patrick, my husband. And he was so gorgeous. He looked a bit like George Best, you know, before. And he was so lovely, and we fell in love actually instantly. And he proposed 3 days later. We didn't actually marry 3 days later. We waited a bit, but we've been together for 33 years altogether now. And I must say, one of the most wonderful things about my life is my husband and my children, because they ground you, family. They make you feel that that's the important bit, and the other bit's such fun. Just before that, I'd done a series called Diary of a Young Man, and I'd been on the beach in Brighton all day. You know, I told you I love going to the seaside. And I came back, and I always rang my agent every night about 5 or 6 o'clock to check up on if I'd got any auditions. And he said, go now, immediately, to the BBC. You've got an audition. I said, I can't. I'm bright goose from the beach, and I haven't done my hair, and I'm in terrible state. Never mind, go. So I went along to the BBC, and I met this wonderful director called Ken Loach. And he then gave me this part. I mean, it was such a fluke. He didn't want glamour. He didn't want a beautiful sort of stylish girl. He wanted real. Well, he sure got real that day. Pews, hair all over the place. And I had this wonderful part. It was a series about 2 northern men who come to London and get together with this girl. And it was very, very new in its day because it wasn't glamorous, because it was real, because it was fun, beautifully written by Troy Kennedy Martin, John McGrath. It was the start of something that was completely different. And the Royal Court did it in the theatre, and Ken Loach did it on telly, this very real, gutsy sort of... What a luck. What luck, don't you think? I mean, yes. Talk about landing on your feet, eh? That's me. Anyway, so I'm now married, and I have 2 children, Ben, who is 28, and my daughter, Marie-Claire, is 24. And Ben is a film cameraman like his dad, and Marie-Claire is an actress like me, and she's just done her first film called Reverb. Anyway, now what's happening with the Live of Birds, we're actually getting very, very successful. I remember one of the funniest incidents that happened to me. I was at the Woman of the Year lunch, no, dinner, a dinner in Leeds, and the Woman of the Year that year was Margaret Thatcher. And it was a very posh do, and Patrick had bought me this fantastic dress. It was very sexy. It was kind of low cut with spaghetti straps, and it was sort of swathed and quite strategic, the way it just landed where it should land, you know what I mean? And what you couldn't do was wear a bra. Couldn't wear a bra with it because it would have shown. So after all the speeches at this dinner, and it was being televised, so Margaret Thatcher was given her Woman of the Year award, and then they introduced everybody who was in the dinner. And they said, and now Nerys Hughes, star of The Live of Birds, and I stood up. And unfortunately, Patrick had got his chair on the edge of the dress. So I stood up, and I suddenly realised that my left breast was exposed like that. And Patrick, great presence of mind, he put his hand up like this. So I'm waving to the camera, Nerys Hughes, and I'm looking like Quasimodo with my husband's hand on my breast. No wonder I didn't get Woman of the Year, eh? The next thing that happened to me, I mean, all through the 70s that went on with Live Birds, and then in the 80s I was asked to do a series in Wales called The District Nurse. Now, it was wonderful. It was very well written, and it was excellent the way it was directed, but I had to wear that terrible hat. I don't know if you really remember it. I viewed the whole of life from under this really odd hat. And, of course, I wasn't allowed to wear any makeup because it was set in the 1920s and 30s, which was brilliant, really, because she was a very strong, capable, pioneering woman. There was no national health in the 20s and 30s. So it was a wonderful part for me. And to be able to have the comedy of Live of Birds and this as well was just such an excellent thing. And I remember we were filming up in the Welsh mountains one day, and it was a story about typhoid. The village had got typhoid. And I was determined to find out what the source was, so I followed this stream right to the top of the mountain, and there was a sheep with rats in it. Now, I'm terrified of mice, never mind rats. I was so scared, and I was practically crying doing the scene, because I had to let the rats run over my boots. I was so scared, and at the end of it, I felt, you know, rather pleased with myself, and everybody clapped, and I was crying and things, and I felt, oh, well done, Nerys, you know. But I went up to the side where everybody was waiting, and I noticed my children, who'd come down for their half term, were playing with the rats. They were tame rats. Did I feel a fool, you know? Pathetic. And then shortly after that, I was asked to do this thing called Alphabet Zoo. And it was with Ralph McTell. You know the singer Ralph McTell, Streets of London? He wrote these beautiful songs. It was about animals. I loved doing it. The only drawback there was another animal. It was the dog. We had this huge St. Bernard. And because he didn't want to do anything I wanted to do, I had to have this cheese in my hand to give him. So all I can remember about Alphabet Zoo is cheese in my hand and slobber from this Bernard. There I was brightly telling my stories with this slobber and cheese and the magic of television there. You, none of you were aware of it. At the time, as I told you, I always did lots of children's things. I was in Listen with Mother and Play Away and Jack and Ori. I did lots of Jack and Ori's, loved it. Always done lots of children's things. But perhaps the most famous was the Doctor Who. Now, I've done Ibsen, I've done Chekhov, I've done Shakespeare. The letters I get about the Doctor Who, I was only in four episodes. I was guest star for four episodes. I was a scientist. Not a terribly realistic one, I didn't think, but I get invited to Canada, to New Zealand. I'm invited all over the world. And still the letters come pouring in. People love Doctor Who, don't they? It's an absolute thing, Doctor Who. It never stops. People absolutely love it. And then I did a wonderful play. I've always thought, as an actress, that I've been a very instinctive actress. I haven't really been very technical. Try to be a bit technical, but mostly instinctive. And I've always tried to be real. I always think whether you're doing comedy, tragedy, whatever you're doing, being real is the main thing. Then people can understand what you're doing. And I remember a wonderful director called Michael Blakemore directing Wild Duck with Richard Briers, was my husband in it. And there was this scene where he's saying he's going to leave home. He's had enough, he's going. And How many husbands have said that to their wives, eh? Well, instead of saying, oh, please don't go, she packed his case for him. Wasn't that a brilliant idea? Don't you think? Isn't that brilliant? I thought that was such a good stroke. So there I am, packing his case for him. No, yes, dear, packing his case. And then you hear a shot, and the daughter has shot herself. And the shock of it, every night it used to take me, and every night the audience went like this, because we'd been laughing, you see, laughing. And then the shock of the tragedy. And I always think this is what's so brilliant about a really well-written script. It isn't a comedy or a tragedy. It's both. Because that's what life is, isn't it? When you're really, really sad, there'll be something that just manages to make you laugh. Or when you're really laughing, something will take your breath. And I think the really best writing does that. Carla Lane did it in Live Birds. She went a bit too far the other way in the end. I mean, we were always crying in it in the end. But it just has such a good balance. And Ibsen and Chekhov knew that. Because they weren't the heavy-handed playwrights that people think they are. Because there's always humour in it. I love that. I can identify with that. Because I'm nearly always giggling, as I've already told you. And I cry a bit as well. Anyway, the next thing that happened to me, I went to Canada. It was a play called Two into One, and it was one of the Ray Cooney farces from the Shaftesbury Theatre. And part of what you do when you do this theatre of comedy is a stint in a play. You just do 3 months. You don't do a whole year like normally when you do a West End play. You have to sign up for a whole year. With this, very clever idea, he changed the cast all the time. Well, he changed the cast and had John Thor, you know, wonderful actor John Thor, and Daniel Massey and myself. And something went a little bit wrong right from the start of this, because when we were rehearsing, I found a lump. And I thought, I think I've got cancer. And I went to have it tested, and they thought so too. And I was rehearsing this play, and I said to Ray Cooney, I think I'd better opt out of this. I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. And he said, you're going to get better. You're going to be all right. And I remember going into Richmond Park and howling and saying, my children are young. I can't. Nothing can happen to me. A week later, we got the result, and I was all right. And the relief was so marvellous. But because of the biopsy, I got stitches there. And the whole thing about farces is opening and shutting doors, isn't it? And this was set in a hotel. And, do you know, I never knew if I was going to go in the right door. In a blackout, you had to go in a room and open the door, and if you went in the wrong room, it would ruin the whole play. It would absolutely be the wrong thing to do. So I never, ever was sure I was going to go in the right door. Well, we'd been about a week in Canada, and I opened the door and let John Thor in, who went in the bathroom, open the other door, which is meant to be my husband. And shutting the door a bit too quickly, I broke my nose. And the blood, poing, poing, everywhere. And my husband, Daniel Massey, was meant to be thinking I'd got a lover in the bathroom. I hadn't, actually, but that was the thought. And he was meant to be really cross with me. But, of course, he came in and saw me with rapidly spreading nose, with blood everywhere. Oh, darling, you all right? Which absolutely ruined the whole point of the play. And another thing that happened to me, I told you that I did Summer Seasons and then pantomimes. I was doing Snow White, and it was in Torquay, actually. And it was very funny because my principal boy would come along. You could hear him coming along because he was on a horse. And you could hear him coming along the pier. Clip, clop, clip, clop. And then he'd come in. And this horse had a life of its own. It always wanted to turn around and face its bum to the audience. It never wanted to face the audience. So poor principal boy who was sitting on it had to kind of turn round, singing as he went. And of course, one night, the worst happened, didn't it? Blip, 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 blip. But when I came to bite the apple, you know Snow White bites the apple and then she falls into a coma. And when I bit the apple, a little voice from the audience, a little boy, I could hear him say, please, please don't bite that apple. And I bit the apple and I fell down into this coma. And the little boy said, I told you you shouldn't have bitten it. Now, fast forward about 25 years. I'm back in the West Country in Plymouth. A play. I'm on tour with Nigel Planer. And I tell the local newspaper about this story because I think it's so sweet. And that night at the stage door, there was a gentleman to see me. And he was 6'4", and he was a policeman. And he said, Neris, I had to come and see you because I'm that little boy who said, don't bite the apple. I was right, wasn't I? He said. Well, of course, now, about 4 years ago, I fell awkwardly when I was filming and wrenched my knee, so I'm a little bit lame. But, I mean, on the world scale of things, who cares? It's not life-threatening. It's, you know, it's just something. I'm a bit lame. And when a director asks me to do television or something, I say, I'm a bit lame. They say, oh, it doesn't matter, Neris. Because, you see, now I don't have to be glamorous. I'm an old granny or an auntie. Or... I'm such a happy girl. And Patrick and myself, we've bought a house with a mooring at the end of our garden. And we're redoing it, but he's bought a boat, you see. So we're kind of gently easing into, I wouldn't call old age, but